being addressed. "May I join you?" I had already spent 3 hours in the garden without seeing the princess. I was beginning to think that I simply wasn't fated to learn anything about my castle before I saw it for the first time myself. To my surprise, the garden was almost empty today, as if both the NPCs and the players had decided to take a break from the verdant pleasures of the palace. The older man who now addressed me was, in effect, the only other garden visitor besides me. "Have a seat." I pointed to the unoccupied portion of my bench. "Please forgive me. I am not used to being addressed by my title, and therefore request that you call me simply Mayen."
"In that case, please call me Crantius."
My new companion either smiled or grimaced as he took a seat beside me. Understanding that an NPC wasn't exactly going to offer me a long monologue, I instantly delved into his properties. It's nice to know who you're dealing with.
"Crantius Ervilix, Duke of Cartus, level 420, attractiveness 22.
For a second, I swallowed my tongue. This was Tretial's father in the flesh.
"You look like you've seen a ghost," said Crantius, definitely smiling now and offering me a pause to collect myself.
"I have not often had the pleasure of chatting with the Duke of Cartus," I replied sincerely. "To be more precise, you are the first."
"One must begin somewhere. I have heard rumors of the true reasons for why my son suddenly changed his mind about starting a family, and I wish to express a father's gratitude to you. The Emperor..."
I like that expression you just used. "To be more precise..." "So, to be more precise, the Emperor, the source of these rumors, told me that you have received a true imperial reward for your efforts. I don't see a point in offering you anything extra. However, as one aristocrat to another, tell me, what does this imperial reward entail? As I recall, even back when he was master of Cartus, Nati was very... let's say he was not a generous administrator. I realize that my question may seem tactless, and therefore will accept your silence. And still, I am curious."
"Bingo! Another bingo, a triple backwards somersault, and another bingo. I'm not sure how I managed to keep myself from falling all over Crantius with the questions that now flooded my mind. If an NPC of this high a level strikes up a conversation about a reward, then there's no doubt at all that he is merely curious. No. Either he has information for me, which I love, or he has a quest for me, which I love, and I can't say which I love more. However, it seemed that I hadn't managed my emotions very well, because Crantius, misreading my reaction, stood up and said,
"Earl, please forgive me. My request was inappropriate, and I am prepared to extend my formal apologies. Allow me to take my leave. If your honor was somehow impinged..."
"Like hell, this guy isn't going anywhere."
"My dear Duke,"
I hopped up and took Crantius by the elbow, interrupting his apologies.
"What apologies? What forgiveness? It is I who beg your forgiveness for my tumultuous reaction. Believe me, it has no bearing on our conversation. There is no mystery about the reward whatsoever. To the opposite, it is the reward that gives rise to the mystery."
"'Pardon me,' Crantius frowned, without, however, leaving. "'I am not sure I understand your last sentence. How can a reward give rise to a mystery if there is no mystery about the reward?'
"'Well, I didn't express myself very accurately, but please try to understand. I was trying to keep you from leaving. Have a seat.' I indicated the bench that we had just jumped up from. I will do my best to explain it to you.
I cannot say you do not intrigue me, Earl.
The Duke's frown dissipated as he retook his seat.
I am already much more curious about the reward than I was only several minutes earlier.
Excellent, I said, retaking my seat as well. The fact is that the Emperor granted me a castle and the title of Earl, so, as you see, there is no mystery here at all. However, the castle itself does give rise to a riddle so nebulous that I can't even imagine how I could solve it. I told the Duke everything I had managed to learn about Castle Urasai up until that point. More precisely, I told him that I had not managed to learn anything at all. No references to it, nor mention of it. It was as though the castle had never existed before.
"'When did the barbarians first attack the dwarven lands?'
Crantius asked, to my great surprise. What did that matter? "'I received the quest to uncover the reason for their raids a month ago.' I figure the dwarves had held out an additional month, hoping to handle the problem on their own before asking for assistance.
And the scouts sent to the castle have not returned, correct?
The Duke went on with his line of questioning, as if slowly realizing something. Had I really stumbled on a thread that would help me unravel the spool of mystery surrounding Castle Urasai?
That is correct. The Emperor told me that 30 scouts did not return.
It's all clear to me. The Duke's face transformed into a tranquil and detached mask. Peering into the distance, and obviously speaking to someone else, he intoned,
Honored heralds, I request an audience with the Emperor. The matter is grave. The honor of Cartus is at stake.
"'You are exaggerating, Crantius,' replied the painfully familiar voice not a moment later.
Nati, the Emperor of Malabar, former Master of Cartus, had honored us with his presence.
"'The honor of Cartus is untouchable. The Dark Lord supported me back in the Dark Forest.'
Your Excellence understands perfectly well that no one can ever sit on the throne of Altamira,
the Duke went on, undaunted, fixing the smirking Emperor with a steady gaze. From my vantage point, the entire scene was so amusing that I couldn't help but crack a smile. To my enormous regret, it did not go unnoticed.
Mayan, I am grateful to you for your deeds, so allow me to dispel your hopes. You have no reason to smile or be happy. The Emperor's reward is a monstrous one.
Crantius!
Came another exclamation from a familiar voice. The Dark Lord!
I don't know why they decided to rename the castle to Urasai. The rest of the world knows it as Altamira, the Phantom Castle, the Curse of Cartus. Many millennia ago, the Lord of the Castle betrayed his ruler and was cursed. The Dark Lord of that era was a very severe overlord, who despised traitors in particular, so the castle was subjected to a terrible curse— All of its residents were turned into phantoms, while the castle itself lost its right not just to exist in Cartossian lands, but in any one place whatsoever. This terrible damnation meant that Altamira would change its location once every 6 months, making it impossible for the castle residents to live their lives in peace. For it is well known that it takes a ghost an entire year to attach itself to the place it haunts. And this is the Altamira that has been granted to you, a castle full of phantoms. So yes, I consider this present a monstrous one, and moreover, I think it unfair of the Emperor to conceal the whole truth of it from you. The Duke, unfortunately, has always loved the truth, and, to our misfortune, is also one of the few sentients familiar with the history of Altamira, the Dark Lord said ruefully. Mayan, Crantius is correct. The Emperor invented the name Urisai, since Altamira in Cartossian literally means Phantom Castle, a nameless castle, a castle that has lost its name. For 3 millennia, it has cast about the depths of the Freelands. Then, suddenly, and we know not why, it appeared in Malabar, displacing the barbarians. We can, of course, look the other way, and in 3 months, Altamira will vanish to a different location. But I wish to give the phantoms a chance of resurrection. Crantius did not tell you everything. Only its true owner may enter the castle. This is why we bestowed upon you the title of Earl. To anyone else, the castle will remain off-limits. Besides, the castle has never before displaced the people living near it. This can only mean one thing. In addition to the ghosts, there is something else living in it. Something so strong that it has managed to overpower the castle's curse. We do not know what it is. The events in the Dark Forest have proved to my father and me that you are capable of thinking outside of the box. So we decided to give you a chance. A chance to discover the truth of Altamira and rescue my former subjects from this curse. They have long since paid for their sins.
But why couldn't you tell me all this right away? I blurted out after managing my initial shock. Why invent the name Urisai?
Because this is not the entire truth, the Emperor said grimly. I am perfectly familiar with the history of Altamira, so there is no reason to assume that I would send good scouts to a certain death. As I told you, the situation is more complicated than it seems at first glance. The Phantom Castle did not simply appear in my lands. It appeared right on top of Glarness, one of the castles of Narlak, and crushed it beneath itself, with everyone in it. Only 3 wounded, condemned, partially mutilated peasants who had been outside of Glarness at the time managed to reach a patrol. Before dying, they chanted a single word, as if in prayer, Urisai. Then their bodies dissolved right there, as if overtaken by some black rot. It was then that we decided that Altamira, having swallowed our castle, had taken on a new name, Urisai. You are a free citizen who has managed to return from the Grey Lands without the mark of death. Your clan includes the 2 greatest warriors of the continent, Plinto and Anastaria. They will protect you from the phantoms outside of the castle.
but you will have to enter Altamira itself on your own. Such are the laws of the Phantom Castle, and we cannot change that. Now you know everything." The Emperor fell silent, and I suddenly felt three pairs of eyes fixed questioningly upon me. Nati, the Dark Lord, and the Duke were expecting something from me. I had no idea what until a notification appeared before me.
"Update of the Inevitable Evil quest. The true name of the castle is Altamira, the Phantom Castle. Do you agree to fulfill this quest?"
And two shining buttons, accept and decline. So it turns out that the quests can be constantly changed and updated, as though the developers themselves have no idea what yarn they want to spin next. And now they've cooked up the next step and let me know by changing the quest? Or was this all planned beforehand, along with my chance meeting with the Duke? No wonder he approached me first. So am I supposed to deal with a mob of ghosts all on my own? A happy little venture. What can I say? "No one besides me may enter the castle?" I asked to make sure, still hesitating to push the accept button. There would be no penalty if I declined. My clan would still receive the castle near Sintana, either now or in 3 months. So I would not be risking anything by pressing the decline button. However, there is always a however, my inner zoo, my personal menagerie, would never forgive me for passing up this chance to acquire Altamira, or at least discover what the devs cooked up in there. After all, it's interesting, damn it. Which is to say that accept was the only option that appealed to me, despite the potential respawns it could entail.
"Not at all," the Emperor said after some thought. "Only the owner may enter the castle. However, there may be more than one owner. So, I assure you that if you were to have a spouse, she too could enter Altamira. She has the same rights as the owner. It is too bad that you do not have a bride. According to Malabar law, an earl may not get married on short notice. Neither a week nor a month will do. First, there must be an engagement. After that, 6 months of waiting, and only then a wedding. I must therefore concede that at the moment you are the only one who can enter the castle."
"In that case, I don't have much of a choice," I smirked, and pushed the accept button. "Urasai, Altamira, the Phantom Castle, how many names can one place have? I will discover the castle's one true name, whatever the cost." Chapter 4 Preparations for the Journey.
"Brother, will you look at this beauty? No, I'm being serious. I'm afraid to imagine how much work went into creating this thing. I can't sense any magic at all."
Wheeling above one of Anher's crystal bridges, Draco gushed with adoration for the city's beauty. Smiling, I found a moment to muss the back of his neck. I had not yet seen my totem in such a state of excitement. If he had such an appreciation for the beautiful, I should take him to the palace. If there is anything worth looking at in Anher's, that was it. When I had left the palace, I had no desire to regale my clan with the coming battle for the castle. I understood very well that Anastaria could, by next morning, concoct several viable options for completing the quest, but, nevertheless,
I decided against ruining the remainder of my day. Summoning Draco and giving him the chance to fly around Anhurs, I was simply wandering around the capital, taking in its sights. I must confess that the architects who planned the city really did a fine job. The facade of every building, except from perhaps that of the Golden Horseshoe, was designed to increase the general appeal of the city. There were arches, balustrades, caryatids, statues, and crystal bridges everywhere. Draco flapped from masterpiece to masterpiece, drawing gleeful exclamations from the child NPCs, as well as envious looks from the players.
Hello?
I was approached by a girl player, Rastilana the Beautiful, a level 24 elf from the Unbreakable clan. Hi, I replied, perplexed, unsure what the girl wanted with me.
May I take a hologram? The dragon,
said Rastilana, turning several times back in the direction of a small group of players standing to the side. Draco, fly over here. There's some work to do, I shouted, trying to stifle my grin. Judging by the several small scars on Rastilana's face, I was sure that she was underage. One of the basic rules of Barleona held that players younger than 18 could not adjust their character's appearance. About 10 years ago, psychologists had found that attaining the perfect image in the game negatively affected the player in reality. He or she would begin to hate his or her too skinny body, too long legs, or too large nose. As I recall it, the rule that forced an underage player's game appearance match his or her real appearance was part of the acting legislation, and therefore, it was more than likely that Rastilana was an adolescent. I doubt that a grown woman would choose to keep such blemishes on her character.
"What did you want?"
Draco asked, and only then noticed the girl.
"Oh, pardon me. Good day.
This lovely girl wishes to take a hologram with us. You don't mind, do you?"
"Me? You having a laugh? What pose shall we strike?"
replied my totem, still enchanted by the city's beauties.
"Hey, listen. Let's both pose as dragons. You can take Rastilana for a spin around Anhurs on your neck. That would be way more interesting than an ordinary picture."
That's an idea.
"What do you think? Do you want to go for a ride?"
I asked the girl, who seemed paralyzed with shyness.
My mom... I'll ask,"
the elf stuttered, her face paling and blushing in turn.
"I'll assume that's a yes," Draco concluded. "Brother, transform into a dragon."
"Attention, you have entered the personal space of an underage player. Pursuant to item 1372 of the laws of Barleona, a permission form has been sent to the player's parents. Please stand by for their decision." "A decision has been received. You may have access to this character for a duration of 60 minutes. Limitation, you may not leave the limits of Anhurs."
Now it was my time to freeze in place. I had never encountered such a text before. I probably should have stopped and considered the situation, but my mind had already undergone the transformation to its dragon form and yearned to fly.
"Oh!"
the elf couldn't help but exclaim when I turned into a dragon, alighting on the ground and offering my neck to Rastilana. I was hoping only that the girl would not squirm about on me like Klutzer had, trying his best to return to firm ground. Otherwise, I'd have some trouble keeping her secure as I flew.
"Let's catch him! Come on, fly faster! He's getting away!"
cried Rastilana, forgetting entirely her stutter and pointing with her arm at Draco, who was outpacing us. Spurring me on eagerly with her heels, like some petting zoo pony, the girl gave herself entirely over to the flight. Biting my lip, I tucked in my paws and, forgetting my rider entirely, darted after my totem. At first, the elf clutched my neck, afraid to fall off. But as she grew comfortable, she grew courageous and began to ask me to fly forward instead of just rising up and down. Just a little more. Draco, who was zigzagging before us, kept sticking out his tongue at her as if mocking her, and gradually the girl's fear dissolved and was replaced with eagerness. With every minute, I was flying faster and faster, until it became abundantly clear that Rastilana wasn't about to fall off anywhere, and, moreover, her flashing eyes suggested that she desired only to go faster. "That's it. I can't stay in dragon form much longer." Returning to Earth, I carefully removed the girl from my neck and turned back into human form. Wasn't that better than taking an ordinary hologram? Instead of replying, Rastilana threw herself onto my neck, embracing me with unvarnished gratitude.
"Thank you, Mr. Mayan," said another female voice.
Another elf, only this time level 114. Considering that she was in the same clan as the girl who was still clinging to me, I could safely assume that I was being thanked by one of the girl's relatives.
"It's nothing," I replied magnanimously, dispelling Draco, as his time had come as well.
"Let's go, Lana."
The level 114 woman squatted down in front of Rastilana. Only now did I notice just how small my rider had been.
"Go and run to your sister. She wants to hear about what it's like to ride a dragon very much. You wouldn't want to keep your little sister waiting, would you?"
"Okay, Mommy. Katie!"
The girl's piercing cry resounded throughout all of Anhurst. Rastilana dashed off, yelling,
"You won't believe the ride I just got!"
"It's not just nothing," said Nargalina,
following her daughter with a loving gaze and then turning to face me again.
"You are the first person she has allowed to touch her in the past several months, even if only in this game. A year ago, when she was 9, a horrible thing happened that caused her deep mental anguish. The doctors advised me to re-socialize her through the game, so the corporation allowed Lana to enter Barleona before she was 14. Not even so much to play as to become a person again. She spent a year walking around in silence, like a shut-in, until she saw a film by the corporation announcing the new empire. She was so struck by the dragon that for the first time in many months she spoke a word. The word was dragon. Since then, dragons are everything to her. Books, movies, fairy tales, pictures. We did not expect to encounter you, much less imagine you would be so generous. I don't have much money, but still, I would like to..."
"Stop!" I interrupted the woman as soon as I understood what she was getting at. "There can be no talk of money. I don't know how much longer I will remain in Anhurst, but I will be happy to give your daughter a ride tomorrow morning. I am staying at the Wings of Galahart Hotel, so if in the morning, let's say around 9, I see Lana, I will be happy to give her another ride. We never did manage to overtake Draco, after all. Deal?"
"Thank you."
The woman's eyes welled up with tears, and she hugged me, touching her lips to my cheek, after which she turned and hurried after her daughters. As far as I could see, Lana was gesturing wildly, relating something to her sister, and constantly yelping out the word, "Dragon!" Good. The important thing was that she had come out of her shell. That evening, returning from the jewelry workshop to my hotel, I fell wearily onto my bed.
23 golden rings, each granting plus 31 to intellect, had not come easy. I was out of practice. I needed to rid myself of this doomed venture of growing my clan and really commit myself to crafting. Opening the list of active clan members, I discovered that only those players who could not leave the game due to religious considerations were still in the game. That is, Eric, Leidy, and Klutzer. Everyone else had signed out into reality and could not hear my tale of Altamita. No big deal. Tomorrow would bring a new day and new meals. I needed only to remember to set my alarm for 8:30. I had to perform my functions as pet dragon, after all. As I was falling asleep, a question occurred to me that would not leave me alone. What had so immured this child's psyche that the typically intransigent corporation had allowed the 10-year-old girl to enter Barleona? Was it something related to men? Unlikely. She approached me quite calmly and struck up the conversation first. Fear, then? Quite possible, but also doubtful. A perplexing situation. It was lucky that she had spied Draco. While I was in my dragon form, I did not catch any hesitance or apprehension from the girl, but that was when she was nearby. What would happen to her when I went off on my travels and she would be left with her family? Should I be giving her rides every day? It's not hard for me, of course, but I'm no social worker either. This issue would have to be solved in some other way. As if stung, I jumped up from my bed. That was it. Some other way. My excitement was so extreme that I began to pace nervously from one corner of my room to the other. Back in Beatwick Village, I had crafted a statuette of a dog for Clowder. That statuette had come to life at the critical moment and protected that key NPC. If Lana was obsessed with dragons, then why not do her a similar favor? Sitting down at my desk, I got out my jeweler's tools and a piece of malachite. It was going to be a long night. Hello again, design mode. "This is for you," I said to Lana, emerging from my hotel the next morning. She had come running up to me, holding a pink piece of paper.
"Dragon, could my sister ride with us, too?"
"Yes, but only one at a time," I replied, unfolding the piece of paper, which turned out to be a greeting card. Reading the inscription, I couldn't help from smiling. "Happy Valentine's Day, dear coolest of all dragons that I know." The clumsy handwriting indicated that the message had been written in Barleona and by hand, while the card itself suggested quite clearly that the girl was becoming her old self again. "I have a little present for you, too, dear," I said, after accepting another hug or two from both the girls and their mother. "Here, this is for you." Squatting before the little girl, I handed her a malachite dragon, a statuette I had carved that night.
"How wonderful!"
Lana squealed. Taking the dragon, she ran across the square, waving the statuette from side to side before her.
"I have a dragon! I have a dragon!"
"Excuse me, but I have to,"
said the mother, wishing to run after her daughter, whose happy cries were already beginning to fade. "Go on," I said, smiling, "before she hides somewhere and we end up having to call the heralds to help us find the little lass. Seeking a group willing to do a quest to deliver some flowers. Need players who have a flying mount."
"Seeking an elven druid to help make a present. We'll pay 300 gold.
"Seeking several players to help grind reputation with the Cupids. Have letters that need to be delivered."
Having been left in relative solitude, I opened the city chat and smiled once more. It was the Valentine's Day scenario. The gist of the event was pretty basic. Valentine's Day had entered Barleona from reality, bringing with it red hearts, flower petals, pink lips, and purple words declaiming eternal love. Every year, the cities of Barleona would play out the United Hearts scenario, in which the players would send their better halves various messages, and not necessarily amorous ones. They could be whatever, from a simple, I love you, to nice haircut. The content didn't matter too much, as long as it fit the spirit of the festival. Every letter written and sent would increase the player's reputation with the Cupids. The winged angels only appeared in the cities on this day to watch over the hubbub with a paternal smile. Naturally, the price of stationery was adjusted accordingly. The corporation sought to make a profit anywhere it could, including among the caprices of people wishing to express their feelings. The letters written by the players, and several NPCs, would have to be delivered to their recipients. To this end, separate delivery quests were created, much to the satisfaction of the various players. No money was involved, only reputation. I must confess that the Cupids have very attractive pets on offer, fluffy kittens and bunnies, for the sake of which the players were happy to spend an entire day completing stupid quests and blotting good stationery with their feelings. Well, what can I say? It was Valentine's Day. Should I maybe write a letter too? Put it into the mail, have some player bring it to Anastaria and earn some reputation.
"Man, do you have a moment?"
asked a female NPC with a large smile. She was about 20, if not less, and fairly cute. A red ribbon was tied around her hair, while the dress she wore was a casual one, like that worn by ordinary Anhursians. "I'm in no rush," I replied, understanding that I was about to deliver a letter.
"How nice!"
The girl flourished her hands and chirped on happily.
"Today's a big holiday, and I simply have no time to deliver this letter. I want to confess to a very handsome, upright, masculine, and all but perfect man that I love him with all my soul. Could you help me with this? Quest available. Deliver a love letter. Description. Deliver Dominica L.'s missive to her love. Quest type, United Hearts scenario. Reward, +100 reputation with the Cupid faction. Penalty for failing or refusing the quest, none.
Hand it over, I replied to the smiling girl, accepting the quest. 10 minutes wouldn't kill me, and I'll be able to acquire a little reputation in the process. Before you know it, I'll have my own fluffy kitten to give to Anastaria. She can take care of it. Where do I need to take it?
The town of Crispa,
the girl replied, still looking at me with a large and open smile.
It's a bit far, of course, but a couple weeks should suffice.
A couple weeks? The map of Malabar instantly popped up in front of me, causing me to utter several unprintable words, which, in turn, made the damsel before me blush. It was no joke. This deal was so rotten that it smelled like the rotting fillet of some immense and already smelly rotting beast. This wasn't just a setup. It was one of the greatest setups of all time. This, I had no words to express the despair that washed over me at that moment. Crispa was situated on the very border of Cartus. The town was effectively a border outpost. I was afraid to even imagine how much money I would spend on teleporting there and back if I wanted to complete this quest.
Oh, thank you. When I mentioned the letter's destination, every other free citizen instantly refused to help me,
the girl went on, with no regard for the state she had put me in.
Since I wasn't moving or saying anything, I guess she assumed I was on board. Makes sense.
Frist is a town guard stationed in Crispa. You won't have trouble finding him. Please tell him that his beloved Dominica misses him and awaits the return of her hero. Thank you so much.
The girl stepped forward quickly, kissed my cheek, and flitted away like a dandelion caught by a bluster of wind. Poof. And it's gone. Crispa, I opened my map once again and regarded the distance mournfully. 10,000 gold in one direction for nothing, and that's even if I managed to get a deal from the mage. What a lovely social quest. And my reward would be +100 reputation, with a faction that I didn't even care about, at the price of 20,000 gold, if I factor in the return trip. Naturally, I began thinking hard about reneging on my offer. Leaving the map open, I opened the quests list and selected the entry I had just received. I was about to push the delete button when I noticed something odd. Not far from Crispa, basically 2 days' journey away, there was a small dot labeled Marker 1. This was the location that Renox, my dragon father, had advised me to go to on my own. Well, well. So I am to naively believe that Dominica had approached me entirely fortuitously, without anyone having anything to do with it. In other words, I have just received a gentle reminder that I needed to visit this dungeon, and by myself at that. All right, we shall see about all this. Barca, what's the news with our raids? I called the girl on the spot.
We have 23 players ready at the moment. 3 tanks, 3 healers, and 17 warriors. Magdi recommended all of them, so I didn't check them out too closely. I trust him. There aren't any further candidates. I just turned away yet another guy who was merely after a projection. He didn't know how to do anything, yet had a pretty high opinion of himself. Are you asking because you have something, or just for the sake of information?
23 players. Tell me, what is their average level?
They're all around level 170. Well, with the exception of one of Magdi's recommendations, a level 42 warrior who could have a bit more experience. But our raid leader was all about him. He said that Quifet, that's the level 42's name, will prove himself. As I understood it, he's one of Magdi's former officers or friends who changed his character and started all over again. He's only reached level 42 so far. I was planning on inducting the whole lot of them into the clan this evening. You're not against such a low-level raider, are you?
Why would I be? If the RL claims that he's ready, why not believe him? What time are you going to induct them?
6 o'clock, server time.
Wonderful. I'll be waiting for an update from you. Hanging up, I made another call. Stacy, what are our plans tonight?
Plans?
Came the surprised response, almost immediately giving way to a mocking tone.
You want to take me out somewhere?
Why not? You are an attractive girl with many redeeming qualities. Why wouldn't I ask you out?
What do you mean, redeeming qualities? Are you trying to suggest that I'm overweight?
I could hear a note of steel in the girl's voice. Still, I refuse to be fooled so easily. Oh, please, Anastaria, that game doesn't suit you. In short, I am inviting you to go out with me in Malabar today. After all, can't I simply ask you on a date?
So, it's even a date, huh?
There was so much sarcasm in the girl's voice that, had she been there, I would have had trouble not
strangling her. Barcina is inducting the new raiders at 6. I'd like to see that. How about 7?
How should I dress?
Dress normal. We're just taking a stroll, unless you're opposed to that. It's a holiday, after all.
In case you've forgotten, it's Valentine's Day.
7. At the central square, I reiterated, instead of replying, and hung up. The idea of taking Stacy with me to Crispa had occurred to me suddenly. I had wanted to spend some time with her alone for a while now, but I had had no opportunity to do so since joining the clan. Someone or other constantly needed her or me to help them with something. But now we could fly over to the edge of Malabar and visit one of its distant towns. To be honest, it was a silly idea for a date. It'd be much easier to reserve a table at the Golden Horseshoe, but I was pretty sick of all the sitting around anyway. I wanted to get some fresh air, instead of once more cramming myself in a box of 4 walls with a genie waiter.
Maggie, do you wish to join the Legends of Barleona under the terms previously stated?
Said Barcina to our future raid leader. The raven-haired man with Central Asian features was standing upright and clearly savoring Barcina's anxiety. Today, my little druid was out of sorts. She was performing her first official induction ceremony. To give Magdy his due, he did not utter a word of mockery or sarcasm to fluster the girl further. His unabashed smile was that of an old acquaintance, or even simply of an older man observing his much younger relative taking her first steps. The clan induction ceremony itself turned out a bit dramatic. I had assumed that Barcina would meet with each new member one-on-one, send the invitation, sign the prepared agreement, and assign them a clan role. But it didn't quite happen that way. Gathering all 23 new hires together, the girl began to work with each one separately, forcing the rest to wait their turns. It was as though these players were all awaiting the grandiose honor of joining the Legends. I found this amusing, since, according to the ratings, my clan did not even number in the top 10,000. Having adjusted the clan properties, which would allow all the raiders to receive their projections as soon as they join the clan, I watched the players' grim faces break into smiles as the small projections of people, elves, gnomes, and dwarves appeared before them. I was especially pleased with Quifat, the low-level warrior. His projection turned out to be that of a party-colored harlequin, balancing on a unicycle and juggling a torch, an orb, and a ring. It was such an entertaining spectacle that I couldn't keep myself from cracking a grin, too. There you have it, our clan's own in-house clown. If someone wished to have a laugh at our expense, now was the time. Ready? I asked Anastaria as soon as the clan induction had concluded. We had grown by 47 people today, 23 raiders and 24 gatherers and workers. Not bad for the first day. I would have to apprise the results.
Clan achievement earned. Clan of Lumberjacks, rank 1. Clan members have mined 1,000 units of ore. Resource collection rate increased by 1%.
It took me a few moments to understand what I had done to earn this clan achievement. Then I realized that our workers had simply commenced with their work. Considering the enormous bonuses that first kills grant, this was a pretty middling result. Although I am nitpicking, the players would still need to reach the mines. Wait, no, I'm not nitpicking. Our clan had already mined half of those resources back at the Guardian's Glade in the Dark Forest. But, okay, let's wait and see. Pretty soon the herbalists and lumberjacks would join the effort as well.
I'm ready,
Anastaria said eagerly, glancing at me with a secretive and curious look. I hesitated to imagine what ideas were milling around her head concerning our date destination. In that case, after you. Offering Anastaria my hand, I activated the portal I had bought from the mage earlier, and which had cost me, as I assumed, 12,000 gold.
"How gallant of you," Stacy replied, accepting my invitation.
We stepped into the portal's azure at the same time. I hoped only that she wouldn't kill me when she found out what lay on the other side.
"Guys, Anastaria is here! Let's take her down!"
As soon as we appeared in the central square of the border town, the chat exploded. I looked around and decided that this town wasn't much to my liking after all. And not only because the chat was beginning to overflow with messages written in Cartossian, nor that with a perfect reflex, Stacy whipped out her sword and deflected a flying dagger, and neither that the watchmen, who were typically posted at the entrance to the mayor's residence, were at the moment lying on the ground moaning with one HP left, while about a dozen players were busy trying to break down the residence's front door. You can't kill the key NPCs, only bring them down to within a sliver of death. Once the fighting ends, and at some point it has to end, the healers would restore the wounded. But no, more than anything, I disliked a deeply troubling notification that was now hanging before me.
"The town of Crispa is under assault by the free citizens of Cartus."
What a date this was going to be.
"Strengthening!" yelled Stacy, using her shield to block a hit from a level 183 warrior and with four quick slashes sending him back to respawn. The town's central square was comparatively empty. Besides the watchmen and merchants strewn around, as well as the dozen players working on the residence's door, the place was deserted. It appeared that the rest of the Cartossians were pillaging the town, and the central square had little to offer in that regard.
"The mayor's residence is straight ahead," Stacy cried over her shoulder. "I'll cut a path. You stay behind me."
"Okay," I yelled in response, diligently following the girl's orders.
Theoretically, men shouldn't hide themselves behind the weaker sex, but I experienced absolutely no contradictory feelings. Considering our levels, experience, and equipment, Stacy was hardly the weaker sex at the moment. She was more like an all-destroying cannonball hurling towards the refuge ahead of us. The crew surrounding the mayor's residence was quite a set. Several zombies, vampires, darkbloods, and even an ogre. Yet such racial diversity did not save the players of Cartus from destruction. Instead of calmly allowing the girl to pass, politely knocking on the door for her and asking on her behalf to let us in, this lot decided to attack Stacy. The highest level among them was 192, so it took the girl just over a minute to sweep clean the threshold of the mayor's residence. All that I had to do was stay out of her way and pick up the fallen loot, gold and items. Now that one could play for Cartus, the rules governing city capture could have been changed, but earlier, during a city raid, all felled NPC would always drop some random item conforming to the NPC's level, as well as a small sack of gold by way of a bonus. There was one little nuance here. If the attacking player died within 3 hours after the city's fall, all of the loot would fall to the ground. Considering that other Cartossians could then pick it up, well, I wasn't about to give them the pleasure.
"We need help,"
yelled Anastaria as she reached the door.
"Let us in. We're under attack."
"Identify yourself," replied a frightened voice from the other side.
"Anastaria, Paladin General of Malabar, and Mayan, High Shaman of Malabar. The square is empty, but any moment now more enemies will appear. We will help you organize a defense inside."
Come in, but hurry.
We heard the rumble of furniture being moved, and the door creaking open to reveal a fairly comical-looking mayor. Who could have imagined that in Crispa, one of the towns of the Lestran province, a shaking and terrified green goblin would be appointed mayor? He was almost an ideal copy of Cornick, excepting his ears, which were as large as Mickey Mouse's, while the general shape of his body suggested a sphere more than a humanoid torso. I had never seen a goblin so overweight in this game.
"Where are the guards?" Anastaria asked immediately, helping the mayor prop the door shut with a dresser.
"Rolling around the square. They were wiped out as soon as the battle started. The assault is being led by the rogues Schialo and Siegfried, free citizens that are levels 244 and 237, respectively. At the moment, there are 1,346 Cartossians in the city, all of whom are heading to—" the goblin began to say, but stuttered and paled before continuing in a whisper,
"The square. Crispa is lost."
Turning to me and studying my stumped appearance for a moment, Anastaria said,
"Man, tell me honestly, did you know what was going on here?"
"How could I? I got a quest today to deliver a love letter to this place. That's it. I couldn't imagine that this was going to happen. I swear, I had no idea, Stacy."
"All right, forget it. It's not the kind of date I anticipated, but okay. Do you have a portal?"
"Yep, back to Anhur's."
"Activate it. The residents won't last an hour against 1,500 players. They'll simply bash down the walls."
"But why didn't they capture it to begin with? Why ignore such a strategically important location?"
"Because they don't want to lose their loot. As soon as the residence is captured, all the guards and merchants become invulnerable. The thinking is that there's no further reason for a city to defend itself. So they killed everyone except for the mayor and went off to pillage the rest of the place. But now that they heard that we're in town..."
"Do you stand a chance against them? I'm not even counting myself. I'm too weak. Yet I haven't seen a large-scale battle between one high-level player and many low-level ones. I've heard rumors that any level 300 or above can destroy an army of hundreds on his own. Is that true?"
"Yep, with one hand tied behind my back and all. Look, control and debuffs ignore level difference, so any decent player facing an army of such size adopts the only sensible tactic, the one where he runs like hell. They weren't expecting us back there, so they never managed to coordinate a defense. That's what did it. But now they know that I'm here and will make sure to focus on me. My defenses won't hold against the focused attacks of several hundred players. I'm not a tank. If there were fewer of them, I'd risk it. But 1,500? That's too much. Especially considering that at least two of them are over level 200.
"Does that mean that you will abandon the town to the ravages of this mob?"
stuttered the local puffball, whose eyes were already brimming with bitter tears. I, meanwhile, was frantically trying to think of a plan. I really didn't want to flee the town, but the two of us could hardly do anything, especially since I was forbidden from hurting other players. Stacy was right about the focusing. Despite the difference in levels, the mob would take care of her in a matter of moments. PvP combat often revolved around focusing one player or another. Effectively, the players would concentrate on one player within range of their attacks, and thereby, altogether, send their target to respawn in one or two salvos. Unless you were a tank, There were no good options for surviving such a tactic. Even if you were 300 levels stronger than everyone, the number of attacks would easily overcome the disparity.
"I beg you, oh great heroes," the goblin went on, tears streaming down his puffy cheeks. "Save my town."
Quest available. Defend Crispa. Description. The town of Crispa is under attack by players from Cartus. Cleanse the city of its captors. Quest type, clan, rare. Reward, plus 24,000 to reputation with Lestran province, plus 500 to reputation with the Malabar Empire. Penalty for failing or refusing the quest, none.
It didn't take me long to come to my decision. The quest type was what convinced me. After all, what's 1,300 players? Barely anything.
Magdi, I'm calling an emergency raid. Leidy, buy some portals to Crispa. Only make sure that the destination is the mayor's residence and not the town square. Barca, try to assemble another group of players. Make sure that they're all at least level 200. You have 10 minutes. I'll be waiting for you in Crispa. There are 1,300 players from Cartus here. The mayor has given us a quest to kick them out of town. Get to it, everyone. The reward is an exalted reputation with this province. I don't need to tell you what kind of rewards we'll get.
I'm starting to warm up to this date, Stacy smiled as soon as I accepted the quest.
I guess the quest prompt was sent to everyone in the clan, because animated responses began to pop up in our chat almost immediately.
I was waiting for you to propose we do battle. 20 of us won't be enough, though. I suggest we call Phoenix, too. Killer would never turn down a chance to lock horns with some Cartossians. If you're on board, I'll make the call, and they'll be here in 20 minutes.
You're pure gold, Stacy, I replied ecstatically, and, unable to contain myself, kissed her. Perhaps I was acting impulsively, but the result only bolstered my confidence. Instead of standing there like some ice princess, Stacy returned my kiss.
Make the call. We can use any help we get.
I wanted to say some more kind and gentle words to the girl, but right then the doors to the mayor's residence shook from a blow. A bar labeled Durability immediately appeared above them, indicating that we had only a few minutes before the mob outside would have access to the building.
Plinto, I have a special assignment for you. Don't wait for our guys to assemble and teleport to the Crispa Town Square this instant. It's full of enemies, so be careful. We need you to lead at least some portion of them away from us. You're the only one who can manage this, since you're immune to control. We only have 3 minutes before they break down the doors.
Me and my boys can be there in a minute, Magdi replied right away. Three tanks with healers are way better protection than some old door. All we need is a teleport scroll.
Leidy, hoof it to Magdi this instant. I'll be expecting the raid group here in a minute.
I'm already on my way. I'm running downstairs as we speak. Magdi, gather your people at the square and I'll jump over there.
Plinto, your assignment stands as before. I need you to bait a part of the mob away from us.
What level are they? Asked my rogue.
2 leaders at 244 and 237. The rest are all sub-200. There's just under 1,500 of them, wrote Anastaria. They don't have any particular defense or buffs. I'm running my healer build, and I took out a level 192 in 4 hits, and several 170s in 2 or 3. Doors at 50%. We have less than a minute before they break it. I'll be able to hold them about 30 seconds, no longer. Hurry up!
I suggest we buy a teleport blocking scroll. As soon as we jump in, we'll block them from leaving the town, Magdi chimed in. Even if we lose, the bastards will have a nasty surprise.
Leidy,
10 seconds. I've bought the scrolls already. I'm activating the portal now.
What's going on with you, Barca?
There's no one around at the moment, or they're all lying as quiet as snakes in the grass. I won't be able to gather a group in 10 minutes at this rate.
Stacy, any news with Phoenix? I asked the girl, who had managed to speak to Eckler in the meantime.
A group of 200 players, all over level 180, will be at the town gates in 5 minutes. There's no point in them coming here. They won't all fit, and anyway, the mob will kill them piecemeal as they file out. Even if we end up retreating, they will finish the job.
How will they receive the quest?
Killer will jump here in a couple minutes with several bodyguards. All we have to do is hold the residence.
Got it. Good luck, everyone, I typed into the chat. At least we won't leave without a fight.
What's up? Looks like we've made it in time.
Literally several seconds later, Magdy greeted me, stepping out of the portal. Taking stock of the surroundings, he began to issue orders.
Nail, Litan, and Uleb, grab your shields and block the doors. Healers, maximum concentration. Anastaria, we could use your help, too. Ranged fighters, fire at will.
No sooner had our level 190 tanks taken their positions than the door vanished with a loud bang, and the Cartossian players poured into the opening. They managed 3 steps, however, before encountering a new wall formed by my tank's shields, and were immediately sent to respawn. Magdy and his fighters gave no quarter.
Plinto, it's your turn,
I commanded my rogue a minute later. Through the small windows of the residence, I could see the Crispa town square roiling with enemies. Realizing that it was much easier to defeat 3 tanks than to break down the building's wall, the Cartossians began to attack us in a coordinated manner. I was forced to admit that we weren't facing a group of children here.
Nails down! Eric, take his place! Priests, heal the tank!
Unable to break through the 3 tanks in one go, the wave of Cartossians abated, thereby allowing their ranged fighters to shoot at my shieldsmen from a distance.
Anastaria, we might as well be in a trap here. They'll make mincemeat out of us from afar. I suggest we sally forth and respawn with a song.
Hold on, the girl instantly countered. Tanks, take 4 steps back into the corridor. Get ready, Magdy. The bastards will have no option but to approach. Focus them 1 at a time. Ignore the tanks. Make the healers and warriors your priority.
I'm in position. I can see you. Commencing operation Train to Nowhere, came the message from Plinto.
It was immediately followed by an explosion on the other side of the square from the residence. The entire town fell silent. The players turned to look at the white smoke where the explosion took place, when suddenly, flashing one of his bloodthirsty grins and twirling his legendary daggers, the rogue stepped proudly from the cloud. Looking over the crowd before him, Plinto graced them with a bitter smile.
"Well, children," he said in fluent Cartossian, "shall we play the killing game?"
With these words, my rogue turned, engaged his acceleration buff, and the corner of the town square transformed into a maelstrom of death in which the Cartossians became no more than heads of cabbage consigned to the shredder. Even from a distance, I could see that Plinto only took 1 hit to kill a player, and, due to the speed of his rotation, not a single melee fighter could approach him. What a curious windmill this was.
"Get out, Plinto,"
I ordered once the rogue's hit points had decreased to half. Once again, I had to give the Cartossians their due. It took them only a half a minute or so to regroup and begin pouring arrows and spells on the rogue.
"Lead them to the main gates. We have reinforcements headed there."
"Eric, switch,"
I heard Nail cry beside me, and the revived tank literally threw my officer aside to take his place. Another explosion shook the square, clouding my view and shrouding Plinto from the Cartossians. The chat exploded with panicked chatter.
Where'd he go?
He took off for the gates. Everyone after him!
Schialo's group, stay at the mayor's residence. Everyone else, follow Plinto. There'll be 100,000 to whomever lands the killing blow.
The last message came from Siegfried, the raid's leader. The square filled with cries, whistles, and yells as about half of the players wheeled around and made for the town gates.
Greetings!
A boom accompanied the opening of a portal as Eckler entered the residence with a retinue of 20 players.
You must forgive us. Our other high-level players are currently in a dungeon and couldn't come. Allow us to offer what assistance we can, he said to the goblin mayor, not wishing to waste a second.
I glanced at the levels of the new warriors and was overcome with a devout shudder. Of the 20 phoenixes, 2 players were level 277, and 1 was even level 302. Now we'll have a proper fight.
Walls are down to 10%, came Anastaria's voice. If we don't sally now, we'll lose. We'll have to risk it. Anyone who can, work on removing debuffs and healing. The incoming damage will be infernal. Killer, you work on taking down their healers. Legends, sally forth.
Guys, the Malabarians are at the gates. Let's get them!